This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. On today's program, we again feature two iconic and influential songwriters back-to-back, Patty Griffin and Sean Colvin. In this half hour, we check back in with my 2015 conversation with Patty Griffin. Patty is among the most consequential singer-songwriters of her generation, a quintessentially American artist whose wide-ranging canon incisively explores the intimate moments and universal emotions that bind us together. She is a Grammy Award winner and seven-time nominee. This interview was her third appearance on Musician's Spotlight. We hope you enjoy this encore broadcast of our visit with Patty Griffin.
Here we go, easy flow. Setting sun is sinking low. Watching now, wait for the flash. You got the view, you got the cash. You don't know why.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be welcoming back today, Patty Griffin. Great to see you again.
Hi, nice to see you too.
Yeah. We also should tell listeners we're joined by Sal, who is a rescue dog of some kind. We were thinking Chihuahua and then Beagle. What else do you say might be in
Dachshund,
there?
Maybe.
Dachshund, yeah. And Sal sings during the sound check. Is what you're telling me. So
he does.
I got to see a little video of that.
Yeah, he's a good singer too.
We should also tell listeners we're doing this interview backstage at the Wilma Theater, and we're doing this interview in late October, the night before Halloween, Halloween Eve, I guess you could call it, at the Wilma. We want to talk about the new recording, Servant of Love, which is your first self-released recording, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yep,
it is. We'll talk about this process. Let's just start right there, because that's pretty interesting to see you doing a self-released project, and talk about just when to making that decision and how that's been for you to have that kind of control. I would think that would be kind of liberating.
It is good. You know, I've had really great experiences on record labels and a lot of not so great experiences. And I think because of the way things are at the moment, where nobody knows what's happening, there's this element of fear and lack of ability to sort of risk anything at all. And, you know, I'm like a 51-year-old woman. I mean, that just makes me a risk right away, right, in that department. So
we'll come back to that.
Big relief to just not have to worry about it at all, what other people think.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, not have to contend with it. Not that I worry about it a lot anymore, but I don't have to contend with it either. So
I read quite a bit of information about the record and had a chance to listen to it as well. One of the things I thought was interesting, I thought was pretty apt description, and that being that there seemed to be a lyrical theme that was there of love and loss was the term that was used in the interview that I read. But also musically, there's a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. A lot of different flavors, which is not that surprising given your body of work, but this seems to be even some new flavors musically.
Well, I've been working with this tuning for a really long time called Dad Dad. It's DADDAD, and it's a very forgiving tuning when trying to learn how to sort of play along with things that you may not be able to do well with standard tuning. And so when I was in the Band of Joy, I ended up messing around with Dad Dad a lot because I was given a lot of parts to play that I found challenging. Mm-hmm. So I messed around with open tunings and it got me deeper and deeper into that tuning. And I didn't want to get off that tuning at all, writing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would force myself to get off the tuning when writing on the guitar and go right back to it. So the record has a drone running through it, through quite a lot of it. And I think that one thing I discovered about writing with a drone is that it doesn't nail itself down. When you write in three chords, three standard chords, the song, the dynamics of the song tend to settle quickly. For me, anyway, and I feel like I'm still learning these songs at this point, and I've recorded them and I've toured them a lot. So at this point, so they're really there's a looseness to the record, I think, that doesn't exist on other records that I have.
Did you go into the recording process with the songs still in pretty raw state?
I think they all were. Because of that, I mean, I played the heck out of them trying to get them, because usually I'll show up in the studio and I'll have a dynamic map and a lot of ideas for instrumentation, but I had ideas for instrumentation, but I did not have a dynamic map. So
now, can you elaborate on that a little bit further for listeners? I think that's interesting, the dynamic map.
It's loud and soft and where to go and how the shape of this thing should a rise and a fall to a piece of
for
music.
For the project as a whole.
Yeah. And I think, no, just the songs themselves.
Oh, the songs themselves, okay.
Individual songs. I will usually have a idea of how I want them to, I feel for them. One of the things I liked about them, they kind of hang on to their freshness for me because they don't adhere to one dynamic shape because they're written on a platform of a drone. So there's a little more life in it for me.
When the world was only you and your warm one moment for forever. My friend, I tell you, I would be the one.
I wanted to talk about specifically the title song, Servant mm-hmm. of Love. There's some really interesting things going on vocally, I think. There's a give and take with the tempo, an expressiveness that I found different and new from your past work. And to me, it spoke of a maturity and a confidence that, you know, younger singers wouldn't feel as comfortable with that kind of a melody, expressing the melody that way. Yeah. That may seem like a little esoteric of a question. I'm not sure where the question is, except to are you feeling a sense of that with yourself as a singer? Because I know when I was listening back to the interview we had before, we talked about, you know, the comfort one has with their own voice. Mm. You made the analogy of your voice being like a flute as opposed to yeah. Aretha Franklin's saxophone or something.
Right, it still is.
So I guess my question in all that is, has to do with your, you know, how you're feeling inhabiting your own voice these days.
Well, when I recorded the record, I was having a lot of vocal problems, honestly. I hurt my voice last fall, and then I got sick a couple of times in between. So for a singer, that's just a nightmare. And when it came time to record, we just booked it and we had to go in. So this, I had to sort of relax with what I had to use for tools. And I think in a way, it's good to do that for a singer, because we're like comedians. We have a bag of tricks, and if we use them too often, we can really lose impact. And I think that it made me work with the emotions of things a little mm-hmm. more.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense now.
And on Servant of Love, I realized also prior to the writing of this record that I had fallen into some patterns in studying sort of classic songwriting, you know, studying the Nashville greats and, you know, that some Sam Cooke stuff and gospel stuff where it's like three chords and you know where it's going and, you know, there's a standard form, which mm-hmm. is wonderful. You know, so many great things have been written that way. I studied it, and wrote in those forms for a while. And I realized that when I would sit down to noodle and I would come up with melodies, that I was throwing them out immediately because they weren't falling into that form. And I think that I just stopped doing that. I stopped editing. I think the study kind of overtook me, and I went back to just pretending I didn't know anything, which I honestly really don't know anything about songwriting still. It keeps, you know, it's infinite, really. So there's a lot to keep learning. But the song Servant of Love, for example, I got a piano melody and I got the first line of the song and I just waited and waited and waited for the rest of it to show up. And when the words finally did show up in the middle of the night, they were very strange to me and elusive. And I got up and I wrote them. And worked on the melody the next day. There really are, I would say, from my core. I don't think I put any, I didn't impose anything I was learning on them. Mm-hmm. You know, they came out of the big soup of what I have within me, you know.
I long to live. I long to live by the ocean. Carry me away. I'm a servant of love. Wave after wave, till my spirit was crawling. To wait till the sea came to me. I to the ground, held by your silence. Words from the deep call it to me, 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 call it to me,
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Patty Griffin. Patty, I can't help but notice, and this happened last time we talked, and particularly given this last recording and reaching the milestone of 50, we're close to the same age.
Yeah.
So I can't help but be interested in particularly passing that landmark of 50 years. I went back and listened to our previous interview, and one of the things you mentioned when you passed 40, one of the things that you said was you rid yourself of self-consciousness but became more comfortable with who you are musically. So given the fact that I've also passed 50,
yeah,
and I'm fascinated with the experience, and but it is one for musicians and artists. It's a very interesting milestone in a lot of levels. So how are you doing with that?
Well, it's kind of like,
let's talk about being 50 and past 50.
I feel like my age bracket in my business, in the business end of what I think the thing I do, I can't call it my business because it just doesn't work for me. The part of this that is commerce, it's sort of like being in junior high. It's sort of like you're not, if I'd made it to 70 and I was still hanging in there, people would go, wow. But right now you're too old to be the cool kid, and you're sort of looking for, your cap is the sage or something. And I don't know, but you don't have it yet. And, now that I'm in, I'm 51, I'm definitely going down the hill. And I think that, it's exciting because there are just physically when your body starts to go the other way, it's not moving towards having and what can I do now. It's moving towards where it's not so much about where I can go, what I can do, what I can see, what I can accomplish. It's more about the accomplishment is more inner and. And what I can add to the world that's positive. Mm. And there's a freedom that comes with not being allowed into what is considered commercially viable. And I embrace that. I'm really, really excited about that. And I think at the same time for women, I don't know what it's like for men, but we actually have just real hormonal shifts that lead you in this other direction where you just don't give about anything anymore. I'm not going to swear this time for you. I don't want to get you in trouble. But you just don't care about the things that you used to care about. I was listening to an interview with Gloria Steinem the other day, and she said, the same thing about turning 50. It's a universal thing that happens to women, and that's a huge freedom. When you're not running around worrying about how to attract somebody or, be the perfect woman, you can really find things in your life that are worth doing that are really, it sounds cliche, really rewarding, mm-hmm. And you can maybe leave a little bit of goodness behind in the world, so there's more room for that. And that's pretty nice,
Running past the sun, heading over the hills. I know every word, they remember my name. I am but a writer,
as you were dreaming, with me at your side. I am dreaming them all out, the night opens wide. Once again we are flying, you in my arms. Once again we are flying, we come to know.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Patty Griffin. Patty, I wanted to talk to you about some other sources of inspiration for your music. When we talked last time, as I may have mentioned, it was at the Grand Targhee Fest in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And at that point, your song Up to the Mountain was still, in fact, when I talked to you about it, you still weren't sure what you were going to call it.
Oh, really?
So that's how fresh it was. For those who aren't familiar with that song, you know, very much inspired by Martin Luther King's last speech before he was assassinated. And I know that recently you've been talking about being inspired by the work of James Baldwin.
Mm. Well, the writing of James Baldwin, he really cracked it open for me creatively. What's really clear about his writing to me is that he's incredibly honest with himself first, which is really hard to do. But it's how, if you want to know how to be good at some creative venture, that's it. That's the key. You have to learn honesty with yourself. And he grew up in a culture that literally killing people who looked like him because they looked like him. And he had to sort of figure out how to have his life filled with as much satisfaction and happiness as possible, given that situation. And I think one of the things that you get from his writing was that he absolutely refused to be embittered. He was really okay with anger. Anger was proper, but not bitterness. And I think when I started reading him as a young woman, I didn't grow up with a leg up on things, I think, financially. And I think that a little bit of a chip on my shoulder over that. I didn't go to college because I couldn't really afford to do it without going into a massive amount of debt. And so I ended up waiting on tables and taking jobs and being really in a position in my life that was incredibly vulnerable. I got married, I got divorced, I kind of went through this. And then I found James Baldwin's writing, and it made me feel like it came along at the right time for me, because I think that although it's taking me 20 years to figure this out, I started beginning to know that the important thing is to do the best you can to express what's in your heart and honestly, and give back, give that to people, and to not color it and with bitterness ever, you know, to try to learn how to be an open person. For myself and my work and what I do, that's a great example. Mm-hmm. So I always go in there and look for that.
I went up to the mountain because you asked me to. Up over the clouds to where the sky was blue, I could see all around me everywhere. I could see all everywhere.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Patty Griffin. PattyGriffin.com is the name of the website you can go to find out more information about what Patty's up to and her shows, her recordings, and lots of good stuff there. Servant of Love is the most recent recording and her first self-released recording, which I'm excited to see you stepping into that and getting that kind of freedom to see what you can do in some of the different roles. And I think it's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for making time to
nice
be on the show.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah. Good to see you again. I hope we get a chance to chat down the road.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to a revisitation of my 2015 interview with Patty Griffin on Musicians Spotlight. In the next half hour, we'll check back in with our 2013 conversation with Sean Colvin. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight. In this half hour, we feature a revisitation of my 2013 interview with Sean Colvin, recorded backstage at the Motherlode Theater in Butte, Montana, prior to Sean's Split Bill concert with Mary Chapin Carpenter. By my count, this was the fourth appearance on Musicians Spotlight by the multiple Grammy Award winner and singular and enduring talent, Sean Colvin.
Oh, here I come, 'cause I don't know better. I'm a thief and a sinner. I'm a fool and a debtor. Pushing numbers, you got you pushing a broom. And what's a lucky song is breaking even to you. And we all fall down, we all fall down, we all fall down. Understand why.
Hi, this is John Floridus. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Very pleased to welcome back Sean Colvin to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. Nice to see you.
Good to see you again, too. We were just reminiscing here before we started the interview that it's been about 5 years since we spoke, so a lot of stuff to cover. I want to tell listeners that we are speaking to Sean today backstage at the Motherlode Theater in Butte, where, as we speak, in late April 2013, she's going to be performing with Mary Chapin Carpenter. Now, this is probably the first time I've done this with a guest. Let's talk about your book first.
Okay.
Because when we last spoke, I think you were still in the process of writing it.
Was I? 2008? I was pretty daunted by the prospect, but my manager kind of dared me to do it. Because he said, I think you have a story to tell. And I said, you know, everybody's got a story to tell. I didn't mean they write a book about it. And he said, well, write a chapter. So I did. I wrote a couple, just kind of started in the middle. We kind of shopped it around and people were interested in it. So I became more interested in it and I decided I would do it.
End of story. I'm not going to stop there because, well, as I mentioned before the interview, I've downloaded it, read it. I love the book. I really loved it.
Thank you.
And it's an amazing story.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
And just one that I thought it was very brave.
Well, the response has been positive. I mean, I haven't heard from anybody that didn't like it. If there have been reviews where it wasn't liked, no one has shown them to me. So, and I hear a lot of the, you know, things that you're saying as well, that it was, you know, brave. I even had an interviewer in Austin say, are you okay? But that's kind of something I hope was going to come across in the book. I am. And I'm really at peace with, I mean, I talk about depression, alcoholism, you know, having trouble with romances, which I know is not abnormal. I'm just really at peace at this point in my life with all of those things. I think that provided me with the perspective to tell the stories without being confused. Do you know what I mean? Or without trying to work them out, you know, in the book. And truthfully, you know, I have gotten so much help from the willingness of people to tell their stories. You know, that's as much as anything has been healing. And I hoped that there was going to be a sense of humor, you know, in it.
Well, I think that is a big part of what makes for a compelling read of Diamond in the Rough, is that you balance those things out. There were, honestly, for me, some literally LOL moments, laugh out loud
good,
moments,
good.
In addition to talking about the anxiety stuff. If I may, just the struggle you had, even just when it was really hitting you, just trying to get out of the house and having your dad on the phone outside the door trying to coach you. It was very moving, very moving.
Thank you. Anxiety and depression often go hand in hand. And I really, from the time I was a child, had terrible, terrible anxiety, you know, panic attacks and phobias. And I, you know, nobody really knew what to call it back then, so I developed all kinds of strategies, some healthy, some not, I guess, for dealing with it. I certainly tried to hide it as best I could. Music was a big part of helping me. I think I talked in the book about leaving the guitar at the foot of my bed, because if I awoke in the night or even any time during the day, one of the things I would do is grab the guitar and play. It would bring me out of it. Put my focus somewhere else, and music heals, you know. It's just whatever. I'm sure someone has done a study on the vibrations, you know, but it's the beauty, and there's just something about it.
Speaking again about your book Diamond in the Rough, the flip side of this very brave sharing of some of the issues that you've dealt with, was stories like the one about, was it the Kansas Fair, the Iowa Fair?
The cows?
Yeah. They paid to see the cows.
Yeah, but I was free. As long as you paid to see the cows, you could come see me.
Even Sean Colvin has
gigs
like this.
It was a Spinal Tap moment, yeah. You know? You've got to be kidding. It's when you call your agent and go, really? Mm-hmm. Is this? But you know what? I know I mentioned in the book, it turned out great.
Yeah.
You know, the most unlikely gigs sometimes are excellent.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Sean Colvin. Well, we could talk a lot about Diamond in the Rough, your new book, but I also want to ask you about your most recent recording, All Fall Down. Mm-hmm. And this is a project that you worked with Buddy Miller on. And now I'm going to reference the book again, see, because I know some. Well, yeah. Well, the thing
because we have such a history.
Right. Yeah. And I did not know the extent of the history.
I moved to Austin, Texas, right out of high school in Southern Illinois with a band. And Buddy was there at the time too, mid-70s. Buddy really changed the course of my life when he asked me. He moved to New York during the, when country music, you know, got so popular with Urban Cowboy and all that. Asked me to join his band in New York. And at the time, I was in California, kind of floundering. I went to New York and joined Buddy's band. And so many things that shaped who I am and helped me become in my work what I am happened in New York City. I was there for 13 years.
We'll talk about working with him specifically on this project a little bit and maybe also the writing that went into this project.
Well, you know, I was working on the book, and I wasn't working on writing as much. And I said to Buddy, I need to write. And as far as the vision, the musical vision of this record, I'm handing it over to you. You know, I trust you.
Wow.
So he put together a band that I would not have predicted, which, you know, had a jazzier turn. We had Victor Krauss on bass, who can play anything, Brian Blade on drums, and Bill Frisell on guitar, including Buddy on guitar as well. And these guys could do anything. Hmm. And I felt like they were having to dumb down to play with me, you know. You know, it's like, well, this one has three chords. And but they were lovely. And as far as the writing went, I just cast the net wide. You know, I knew I'd do better co-writing because I hadn't written all that much on my own while I was working on the book. So I not only wrote with John Leventhal, who, you know, I write with, obviously, a whole lot. I asked Buddy if he had anything. And he reached out to Victor and Bill and Brian, and they sent me things. So I just was asking for music from people because I'm so comfortable writing that way. And that's how it worked out with Victor and Bill. They just gave me some produced pieces, and I went for it. Who else did I write with? Well, I wrote lyrics with Jacob Dylan on one song. We worked through over email, and I sent him the music, and he wrote an entire set of lyrics very quickly, great lyrics. And he goes, I'm rather wordy. And I love wordy, you know, but this was rather wordy. I'm like, I don't know if I can fit all this words in. So I was able to take the gist of what he had written and pare it down in a cool way. And I'd already had the chorus. So I'd never done that before.
Hmm.
I never, you know, co-written lyrics in that, especially in that way. You know, just revising someone else's ideas, just separate from them. And I loved it. And I love what we came up with. It's Seven Times the Charm is the name of that song.
Thank you.
the light of the sun. I didn't feel you turning, didn't know what it was, but the rains had already begun. Oh, you and I never once saw you smile as I pulled you into my. Seven times a charm.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm joined today by Sean Colvin. Sean, you know, as I look at your career, one of the things that strikes me is you can hang with songwriters, and musicians. And that seems very unique. I can't think of a lot of other musicians who've been able to do just that.
Well, that's a very flattering. I had never thought of it that way. You know, I put so much time into paying my dues as a musician, and it came to me easily, the guitar playing and the singing and harmonizing, but my dream of being a songwriter was such that I couldn't let it go. That was hard won. So the fact that you say I can, you know, hang with the songwriter, mm-hmm. that's still a pinch me sort of idea that. Mm. I can stand among, you know, some of my idols I've met, and they've told me they liked what I write. And, you know, that's about the best thing you can imagine. So here are these people that I listened to and was so moved by and affected by: Jackson Browne, James Taylor, you know, Bonnie, met Paul Simon, sang at a tribute for him, a couple of them. Right in front of him. I know. Woo! These were the people, some of the people, there have been many, who shaped my life, you know, not only my musical life, but, you know, to me, they shaped how I perceived bits of my past. They were soundtracks, as we like to say, you know. Mm-hmm. So if someone comes up to me that, you know, a listener, a fan, that says, this record was the soundtrack for, I mean, I know what they're talking about, and that I could serve that purpose for somebody else is just about the most rewarding thing that comes of what I do. Yeah. Mm.
Sean, I wanted to ask, which of your songs do you feel is the most autobiographical?
I got to think about that a minute. Maybe Diamond in the Rough. Yeah,
hence the title of your book.
Hence the title of my book. Yeah, no. that was just some real basic growth stuff and it really launched me into my writing career. I mean, that was a very, very early song, and I think I said in the book it's the song where I went, you know, it was revelatory, and I'm like, I think I understand how to tell the truth in a way that's my voice. Oftentimes I'll write by singing a melody over the music and not, you know, and singing syllables that turn into words sometimes. And, you know, it's kind of go towards the fear a little bit, like who knows what's going to come out. And that's how that song started. You know, it just started with that line, and I was scared of it, but it turned out to be so cathartic and write, you know. So you know, being a little frightened of your work is not necessarily, of what comes out, and not able to explain it right away is not necessarily a bad thing at all. Yeah.
Came down to the water with a little stone in my hand, and it would shimmer and sing, and everything as a little girl it came down. In a little while I got steeped in authority. Heaven only knows what went wrong, but there was nothing so cruel than to bury that jewel. And it was mine all along. I'm gonna find it. You're shining, I can see you. You're smiling, that's a navel. And I'm holding on to you like a diamond in the rough. Every now and then I can see I am getting somewhere. Where I have to go is so deep. I was angry back then, and I guess I still am. And I have lost too much sleep. I'm gonna find it. You're shining, I can see you. You're smiling, that's a navel. I'm holding on to you like a diamond in the rough. Like a diamond in the rough. And in my dreams I go down to the water with a little girl in my arms, and we shimmer and sing, and we know everything. In my dreams I go down. You're shining, I can see you. You're smiling, that's a navel. And I'm holding on to you like a diamond in the rough. Like a diamond in the rough. And you're shining, I can see you. You're smiling, that's a now. And I'm holding on to you like a diamond in the rough. Like a diamond in the rough. Like a diamond in the rough. Like a diamond in the rough.
Thank you. Sean, when we've talked in the past, I know that you've always had some good outlets for getting away from music. Triathlons, I remember, was one of them. I think maybe when I first met you, sewing. From reading the book, I know shopping for good clothes is also high.
I'm reeling that one in.
Yeah, yeah. Was there an intervention involved?
Pretty much. pretty much, yeah.
Anything else going on? It's the outside of music, just for fun?
I love the words with friends. What else? The iPad has kind of taken over as the thing that I relate to. I mean, I read all my books off the iPad. I play the words with friends. I even shop on the iPad. You can just surf, you know, endlessly. I'm trying to think of what else goes on. You know, my life is a lot about my daughter. She still doesn't drive, you know, she's almost 15. So when I'm home, I'm the quintessential soccer mom. I mean, I'm taking her to school. Wow. I'm picking her up. I'm making dinner. We're going to swim team. We're going to whatever she happens to be into at the time, and picking up friends and taking them home. And, you know, so that's great. What I do.
All Fall Down is the most recent recording, and Diamond in the Rough, the most recent memoir.
Yeah.
Perhaps there'll be another one down the road.
I don't know.
Still a diamond.
Still a
10 years. 10 years
out of the rough.
Yeah, out of the rough, exactly. SeanColvin.com is the name of the website where you can go to and find out more information about Sean. Thank you so much for making time to speak with us again.
It's
on
my
Musician
pleasure.
Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
Sunny came home to her favorite room. sat down in the kitchen.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight and a rebroadcast of our visits with Patty Griffin and Sean Colvin. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.